Hey, you're listening to Blindsight. Let's go. Mental health isn't something to take lightly. It's time to fight. It's time to thrive. Let's do this.
This is Blindsight and your host, Bill Lundgren. Welcome. Glad to have you aboard. And I'm real excited because we've gotten some mail regarding the 12 steps that we did over the last 12 weeks. And I'm real excited that we generated some responses and people had some very important questions to ask. And we'll get a chance to take at least a few of them, few of the letters, and try to elaborate a little more. And I'm afraid you're going to have to depend on me to do the talking, but you know I'm not reluctant to do that. And so let's get started. Jonathan is on board. He will read the question. And so let's go for it.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's really nice to have people who are listening quite literally from all over the nation, from all over the world. And, you know, sometimes as producers and hosts, we don't know really where our information is coming from right. And who's out there listening. So to all of you guys out there who are actually listening to this show, we love and appreciate you, and thank you for these questions. Some of these are pretty intense, and so we've got five of them in the queue, so I hope we can get through them all. But we're going to start off with Shannon in Minnesota. Hey, Bill, in episode one on step one, you talked about admitting powerlessness over addiction. I get that in my head, but my heart, I'm still clinging to control. How do I let go without feeling like I'm giving up on myself? Any advice on what that surrender actually looks like day to day? Good question.
Great question. And it's a question that a lot of people ask because the whole idea of being powerless over anything and being powerless over addiction is a difficult concept to swallow, because we can't imagine that we're powerless over anything. And that's where we run into trouble. And I think the whole powerless thing is actually the first step that he's talking about is understanding that your life is unmanageable. And I know my life gets a little unmanageable at times, and I kind of like, oh, it's not really unmanageable. And I, you know, go back and forth, and like any human being, I say, am I really? And sometimes, particularly around addiction, it does get unmanageable. And then it becomes real clear that you got to do something. And, you know, it's hard to believe that we can't say no to something that we're addicted to.
Yeah.
But that's a fact. And if your mind gets caught in the trap. And so in terms of how to manage it, part of it is to understand when the feelings come up the urge to use. When does it come up? Can we do some things differently? There's an old cliche that says that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yeah.
But it really is, in fact, exactly that. I had a client one time who said, you know, on my way home from work, I pass my favorite liquor store and I get, you know, I want to just pull in. So I made I said to him, well, what about going in a different direction? And it hadn't occurred to him. But from there on in, he changed his method of going, or his direction of going home. And that made all the difference in the world. And sometimes we have to do this in terms of control. We're not, you know, this is not forever. This is not something that is carved in stone. It's just we have to give ourselves some time to develop sobriety, to change our behavior. And again, an analogy I use with clients is, what arm do you put what arm of a coat do you put your arm in?
Yeah.
And what would be your answer, Jonathan?
Usually I swing it around my back and put my left arm in first.
Left arm. Okay. Now, if I were to give you an assignment to, from now on, for the next couple of weeks, arrange to only put your right arm in first, that would get really confusing.
Yeah, it would actually.
Yeah, right. Because we're so used to doing, well, addiction is something similar. You know, if we have to change some things that we do, and I know we don't like to do it. For example, if a party where liquor is being served is a trigger for you, then for the time being, one of two things, if you have to go to the party for some reason, you go just for a few minutes, say hello, and leave, or you just beg off for a while until you feel more in, quote, control. I think this is an interesting question, too, because the person who wrote is really thinking about the dichotomy, which we will be talking about later in terms of mind, what we think, logic, versus what we feel. And he said, intellectually, I understand control, but I have a lot of trouble with the actually doing it. And that's where the dilemma is. And to find a way to change that for yourself then helps you to gain control. And also, give yourself a break.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're new. And so everything is going to get a little bit complicated when you're changing behavior.
Sure.
I don't like to change my behavior because it's such a pain in the butt.
Right. Well, how do you get rid of that behavior without feeling like you're giving up on who you are?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You're really, what you're doing is not giving up who you are. You're, in fact, enabling yourself with sobriety to be more who you are. Because that, whatever you're addicted to, has interfered from you being truly yourself.
Yeah.
And so this is the entryway to finding out who you really are.
So what I'm hearing you say is that it's not necessarily giving up on yourself. It's enabling who you want to become.
Yeah, exactly. To really find who you are by being clean, being more in touch with your feelings, which will take a little time.
Sure.
It takes a little time for us to really restore our sanity, so to speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of recalibration that goes,
right,
that goes
exactly.
into that.
And, you know, the thing is, we're just talking the first step. There are 12 more steps to go, and it's laid out that way to give us time.
Yeah.
To gradually incorporate what we need. You don't go directly from one to step four.
Right.
And so,
I'll let you finish your comment. Yeah, go ahead.
It's those other steps in between where, okay, we accept that we're unable to control, and then we come ready to do something about it. And the third, of course, is to some of the steps to help, and then the fourth being more concrete. Yeah.
And speaking of the first step, actually, Shannon, thank you so much for emailing us. We really appreciate that, and thank you for that vulnerability.
Yeah.
Devin, afraid of what I'll find in step four, speaking of step four, I've been listening to Blindsight series and I'm stuck at step four. I'm terrified of what I'll uncover in a moral inventory. What if I write something down and it changes how I see myself forever? How do you handle the fear of your own past? And do you have any tips on getting started without being overwhelmed? Holy smokes. That's a question and a half, Bill.
It is a question and a half. And I have to, the first thing he's done is recognize that that might be an impact on him.
Sure.
But, and that's certainly the start is to understand that. And, you know, with the fourth step, when we're a newbie, we want to do all 12 steps within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And we don't give ourselves a chance to kind of take it slowly. I've had people do a moral inventory several times in a number of years because some stuff, one of the things our body has and our mind has the capacity to block stuff that we don't think that our brain decides we're not ready for.
Absolutely.
And so, what you have is the idea that it's going to be something that's going to come up. It's not going to come up until your brain is ready for you to look at it. And the other piece of it is part of the fourth step is not to uncover the dirt, but to help you understand your past and then forgive yourself and find a way to forgive yourself. If there's something major, the fact that you're saying, okay, that's in the past. There are a lot of reasons that that happened. I'm not doing that again, and I'm going to forgive myself for what happened. Whatever it is actually affirming who you are, who you're choosing to be. That is a person who owns up things that he's not real happy about and willing to do something about it. And that takes courage. And that to be respected and say, oh, okay, this is coming up. Not to shame yourself, but to say, this is what I have to forgive myself for and possibly have to do some work on.
What if you're afraid of not only your past, but how it might change you moving forward in step four?
Well, it will change you going forward in terms of getting that that thing out of the way. Because, you know, you even though it's not acknowledged, your brain is sort of chewing on it.
Sure. Okay.
And so if you put it out in the open, and what people invariably find is that it wasn't as bad as they thought it was. And the other thing is, and this is where being attending a 12-step group is helpful, because number one, you will hear other people who might have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And two, you have some people who will be sympathetic, not criticizing. They will be sympathetic to what you're looking at and what you're trying to see and the work you're trying to do, and you need that support. See, so much of what we're talking about is what goes on in our brain, and our brain is helpful in some ways, but in the other way, it's circulating around, and we kind of lose our perspective. And so getting it out, getting it on paper, in the fifth step, when you share with another person, you get a perspective, and it gets out so it doesn't do any more damage to your self-esteem.
Yeah, and you mentioned in, I think, the first question, trying to complete all 12 steps in a matter of weeks, and it feels like this one may take not 1 week, maybe not a month, maybe 6 weeks, 10 weeks, like...
Yeah.
this feels like a really big one that you have to keep revisiting.
Well, that's the key word. You know, you may find that you have to do a couple of these over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stuff that got blocked the first time around, you say, oh, that's interesting. And you have to do the work. But that is all part of cleaning out the manure.
Yeah.
As I call it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Devin, for sharing that question. That's a really scary thing to understand, and a brave thing to understand, that if you write something down and it changes you for the rest of your life, I hope that it's a good change.
Yeah.
And I hope that it's a change that you see for the better. And it's not a fear of who you were in the past, but a recognition of who you can be in the future.
One of the things to add on to your point, forgiving yourself is part of
yes.
the process of recovery,
yeah.
and it's that be kind to yourself. This is not mm-hmm. not an opportunity to beat yourself up. You've already yeah. done that.
Yes. Absolutely. So again, thank you, Devin, for that question. We're going to move on to number three. Tasha, who is a single mom in Texas. Thank you. Proud of you for being a single mom, and happy Mother's Day coming up.
Right.
This is coming out a couple days before Mother's Day. So how fitting for this. She says, how do I make amends without reopening wounds? Hey, Bill, I'm working on step 9 and I want to make amends to my ex-husband and my daughter. Oof.
Yeah.
But our history is messy, and I'm scared I'll make things worse. How do you approach amends when you're not sure if the other person even wants to hear from you? Any advice on doing it with grace and boundaries?
Okay. Oof. One of the things that people think that we have to make amends and we have to, do something. And a part of the amend process is unless it would harm you or another person. The making amends, there's a mistake that we make that amends will patch up things with the other person. No guarantee.
Right.
Your making amends is for you.
Mm-hmm.
How the other person takes it is up to them. You have absolutely zippo control.
Correct.
And some people may say, or you have to set the stage and say, look, I want to make amends. And they may say, I don't want to hear it, and hang mm-hmm. up. Then that's their decision. That's not yours. You tried,
right.
and you can do the best you can. Maybe at another time you may do it. But the amend is for your internal system.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, to forgive yourself for what you did.
Yeah.
And that's real important, because any kind of addiction has caused you to do certain things you wouldn't otherwise do. You've got to recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, you have to make amends to yourself for having done that. And this also applies to the other question. You know, that question, I would not have done it if I had not been under the influence of XYZ.
Sure.
And that's what we have to come to realize, that we were in an altered state and we may have mm-hmm. done things which we regret. Now, we can offer that to other people, but they are under no obligation, and it's
right.
to their loss if they don't listen. But
mm-hmm.
they're under no obligation to say, no, to forgive you or to do anything else. And so that's one of the things that the hardest thing for us to realize in general, that we don't have control over other people.
Sure.
We have the only thing we have is control over ourselves. And if other people are going to respond the way we don't want them to, that's on them. And that's a very, again, these questions, I hope our listeners realize that really these are questions that come up in meetings all the time.
Yes.
You're not alone in having these questions, and that part of the process of coming to an acceptance of ourselves as we are imperfect human beings. Now, I don't like to say to anybody I'm imperfect. However, I know that I am. And, you know, and so all of us are. And we have to embrace the imperfection as well as, you know, the things we do right. That's who we are.
Well, if I could ask a follow-up question on this particular one, when you're thinking about, you know, trying to make amends with somebody, you talked about forgiveness in that last question and how you have to forgive yourself. Could you kind of frame, or would it be appropriate to frame trying to make amends as a way to forgive yourself and kind of saying, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm sorry for what I did. I'm sorry that I did X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I just would love your forgiveness. I'm asking you that forgiveness.
Well, no, don't ask, you know, I hope you will forgive me because, it doesn't matter what you want. It matters you can say, I hope that you'll forgive me for this and we can start now to make a new life. But the person may not be the kind of person who's willing to forgive.
Yeah.
And you have no control.
That's got to feel really good. I mean, to a point, just getting to that level and saying, you know, will you, I hope you'll forgive me, and getting to that point of, you know, wanting to make amends.
Yeah. And then you can talk about, you know, how can I make amends to you? And
yeah, that's a big conversation.
Right. And some people will say, I don't think you can make up for that, but I'm willing to change, you know, to start off a new relationship where you say, I don't never want to speak to you again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad, but that you have done all that you can do under the circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. Tasha, thank you. And I hope we answered your question. Well enough. If you guys have any more questions, please send us some more mail and we're going to answer as many of these as we possibly can.
Right.
But we're going to move on. Chris in Seattle is struggling to connect with God in step 11. You talked about conscious contact with God in step 11 and it really stuck with me. I'm trying to pray and meditate, but I still feel distant and frustrated. What helped you deepen that connection? Any simple practices that brought you peace when you felt spiritually blocked?
This was one I was really interested in getting another opinion. And I contacted Joe, who was the one who did step 11 for us. And he made a couple interesting points. And this, again, this applies to all the questions we have. There's something about ego, and there's also something about, I can't remember the other term, but self-will. And what he's saying is that sometimes we pray and we want answers from God or higher power, and we don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And we get real PO. So what's the worth of, you know, what's the value of this?
Mm.
And maybe higher power wants us to do some work on whatever it is we're praying, rather than meditating to do some work on it. And Joe also made another interesting comment. He said, when you're in that kind of frustration, when you're really feeling like you're not hearing anything, the thing to do is to go out and help someone else. That is, give service to someone else.
Mm.
And by that, you may get the answer indirectly by doing, rather than trying to get something written in papyrus handed to you, or a clay tablet, that this is what you're supposed to do. Go out and be outside of yourself. Forget the ego. Forget the self-will. We say, okay, I'm not getting an answer. You know, it's a good time for me to go out. Even just a smiling at a stranger, say hello to a stranger. That's the way you're getting outside of yourself. And sometimes that's an answer to exactly what we're looking for.
So go out and connect.
Go out and connect. Absolutely.
That's a pretty easy one.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be. And that's why I was hoping he would come, that Joe would come up with an easy one. And he said, yep, this is what his feeling is. And yeah, it makes sense. He said, you know, when you try real hard, sometimes the message is you're trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes when we say something is not, you know, not working right, maybe it's just not the right time or the right way. What I need to do is what I can do, and that is to reach out to another person.
Yes. Yeah, that's really great. That's an awesome question. So, Chris, thank you.
They are all awesome questions. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've got one more.
Okay.
And as we're wrapping up, this is Ellie, and the subject, can I really help someone in step 12 if I'm healing? Hey, team, I love your episode in step 12. I want to share what I've learned, but I still feel like a work in progress. Is it okay to be a guide for someone else when I'm still healing myself? What advice would you give someone who wants to help others but still feels unqualified?
What is the qualification that we need to help somebody else? We find out indeed, oh, I'm not as bad as I thought I was, or helping someone. And one of the things that Dr. Bob and Bill W., both of them were wounded birds, shall we say.
Oh, yeah.
And they both felt like nothing was working.
Mm.
You know, Dr. Bob went to see Carl Jung, the eminent psychotherapist. And Jung says, go get involved with something where you're helping other people. And, if you feel something you're unqualified for, you know, you can say, you know, I'm not sure that I'm qualified, but here's what I think.
Yeah.
And then sometimes by saying that, you trigger something in the other person and say, oh, gee, that's so helpful. I really appreciate you taking the time. And one of the things right now, I'm interviewing some candidates to be rector at our church. And one of the things we're talking about is that sometimes, when they make visitations in a hospital, there isn't anything they can do. They're not doctors. They're not nurses. But what they do is be there for somebody. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's all that's needed. It's just for you to be there and to listen and to support. Yep. And you don't need you don't need a PhD for that. Trust that you know your boundaries, but that you'll find if you try that you really are much better than you think you are.
Yeah.
It's our ego that says, oh, I'm not that good. I shouldn't, yada, yada, yada. But what we have to do is say, okay, I'm willing to try.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. There's an aspect of humility that I like about this question. Right.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I kind of sounds like if you're in step 12, you feel this. I related to the senior in high school who's in their last semester, and they want to give as much counsel and coaching to the freshmen who are coming up behind them.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have answers for what I have done.
Right.
But I don't have any answers for what's to come.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate the vulnerability of that question.
Right.
And I mean, it shows the desire of her heart to want to reach out and to help people who are coming up behind her. So I really appreciate that.
And you see, that's when you reach out and help somebody and, you know, reach out to somebody, just the reaching out is the benefit. We don't have to be, geniuses. We just have to be human beings. And just by asking the question that you did, you certainly showed me that you're a human being with humility, and you need to spread your wings a little bit, and you'll find out that you're actually just by being a human being. That's what a strange idea. Just being a human being
Yeah.
Instead of a human doing, which is what some therapists talk about, a human doing, human being, being there for someone, that's all you need to do.
Yeah. Man,
great,
I love that.
Another great question.
Yeah. And if you guys have more questions, please feel free to ask. And we're going to be going into a new series in a couple of weeks about happy, mad, glad, sad, kind of baseline emotions. And Bill, do you have anything to kind of wrap up this 12-step process and then going into these new emotions that people may be feeling coming out of 12 steps?
Right. Well, you see, I think the question of in the first one about I feel something different from what intellectually I know I should do. This is where we're talking about this conflict, in a sense, between emotion and logic.
Yeah.
And the thing that I hope will come out of our doing the Mad, Glad, Sad, Scared discussion is to help us to kind of separate them out and separate and get in touch with our emotion, which doesn't mean the emotion takes control.
Mm-hmm.
The logic also has to play a part. That you know, it's like I always use the image of my mother who didn't know an emotion if she tripped over it. And we were a family that was very much into the logic. And she was a very, very intelligent woman. And I don't fault her for that. But boy, as soon as, being a therapist, you're new in therapy, you want to talk about emotions, and she just wasn't having any parts of it. But that was my thing. That was not hers. Yeah.
Right.
So we have to sort of sort out what is emotion. What is it? The intellect helps us to manage the emotion, and the emotions help us to manage the intellect. So that's
absolutely
the distinction. And in these questions, what Joe was saying, that the intellect is something of, he didn't say it in these words, but the intellect is something of the self-will coming in.
Sure.
And I think there's this, to a certain point that makes sense. So what I'd like people to understand from going through the 12 steps, if there is a way, a pattern in which we can help ourselves to be more the kind of people that we want to be.
Sure.
And that's what it's there for. And, when I did the history, I talked the origin because it worked not just around addiction, but around how we help ourselves be more the people we want to be.
Love that. Well, I'm proud of you, Bill, and thank you for being such an amazing host over the last 12 weeks. And thank you to all of our guests who came on the show. You guys were absolutely fantastic. And we appreciate everybody who's written in, who's called in, and really brought this community home. Bill, as we wrap this up, do you have any final words of encouragement and talk a little bit about the Mad, Glad, Sad, Happy kind of emotion series that we're going to get into?
Okay. I think that, talking about my mother, when I'm going to be doing this series, I'm going to be thinking about her because we need to have both the emotion and the intellect. And we'll be talking, it's very simplistic in the beginning, and a lot of people object to it because, we don't have all kinds of wiggle room. I'm starting with the basic that says, okay, we start with this, and then we can go from there to the individual subdivisions of each of those four, and also what can generate it and what we need to watch out for and how we deal it. And I hope to talk a little bit about how we recognize it in other people so we don't get caught up in something that we don't need to get caught up in.
Yeah.
And so it's a learning process, and it's going to be simplistic in the beginning because we have the amazing capacity to complicate things. That's human nature. And I want to get down to the basic. So from there, we can complicate things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love a brain that overcomplicates and overthinks things.
Yeah, exactly.
Because neither you or I are those types of people.
Yeah, that's right. But what we want people to do is to use our two telephone lines. And, you know, right now I'm blocking on the help, not helpline, but...
It's our feedback line.
Feedback line.
Yeah.
For the email, it's feedback@aftersight.org. And telephone is feedback@720-712-8856.
That's it.
Thank you for listening in. And we look forward to the next session with all of you. Hope you'll continue to keep up, to give us information about the things that you're thinking about. And we look forward to the next opportunity to have contact with you.